Hello, everybody, and welcome to Upstate on the Move, a podcast highlighting entrepreneurs who are on the move here in upstate New York. My name is Jack Carpenter, and I'm joined by my co-host, Bob Manasir.
Hello, everybody.
How you doing today, Bob?
I'm good, Jack. How are you?
Good. We got Heidi Knobloch coming in a bit, who is the owner of both Plum Oyster Bar and Receipt HQ. We love the Plum Oyster Bar, don't we?
We do. And we like samples.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping she brings samples in.
We always have our hopes high when restaurant owners come through here. So far, I don't think any of them have.
No, but I blame that on our producer.
Yeah. Richard, you could reach out and say something beforehand. I'm just saying. The only thing that's ever happened is our one guest, Sam Mir, took food from us. So technically, we're negative in the samples, and we got to turn that around.
And we do love the Oyster Bar.
We do.
Yes.
Great cocktails. Very fine place in Troy. It's been open a couple of years now. But she has a wild story. I'm excited to hear more about it. All righty. We are here with Heidi Knobloch, owner of both my beloved Plum Oyster Bar as well as Receipt HQ. Now, Heidi, to kick things off and get our audience a little familiar with you, we'd like to hear your elevator pitch.
Sure. So Plum Oyster Bar is a restaurant in downtown Troy. It's right on 2nd Street. We serve the freshest oysters in the capital region, as well as basically American cuisine. So everything from a burger to a halibut, and the best cocktails ever made by my wife.
The best cocktails ever. You have my attention. Now, Receipt HQ. Is that as fun?
No, Receipt HQ is very boring. So most people don't know this, but anytime that you're in a restaurant and you sign a receipt that has a tip line on it, the restaurant is required to keep that receipt for 18 months to be able to adequately fight chargebacks. Mm-hmm. And some places, depending on what type of point of sale system they use, have to keep it for 7 years because it's an employee record.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's awful. And so,
you physically have to keep it?
No.
Not anymore.
But yes, so most restaurants, basically what their practice is that they take these receipts at the end of the night, they put them in a number 10 envelope, they write the date on them, and then they put them in a banker's box in the basement. And if they ever need a receipt, they spend hours and hours and hours looking for these receipts. And I was very annoyed by the amount of paper that we had to keep because I had like 14,000 receipts. Mm-hmm. It's like, what am I going to do with all these receipts? And it's only, you know, 12 months in, yeah. Right? And so I was looking for a company that would be able to scan these receipts or something, just like get them mm-hmm. out of my face. And I couldn't find one. So I made the company. And so what Receipt HQ is instead of putting the number 10 envelope in your basement, you send it back to us. We give you prepaid mailers. You send it to us. We scan everything for you. And then we put it up on the cloud.
What's preventing someone from just scanning it in their back room?
Laziness. And also just time. So yeah. What we found is that customers who have minimal storage space and not a huge management team are our best customers because they really just don't have time to deal with these receipts. But you're absolutely right. Someone could do that.
Wow.
It's called customer discovery.
Customer discovery.
That's right.
Heidi knows that.
I love it.
So Heidi, you got to give us a little more backstory on you. You go from a Oyster Bar to a software mogul. So how about before that, though? You have an interesting story.
Yeah, sure. So immediately before that, I was a professor. So I was teaching at Bard before starting Plum Oyster Bar. I was the digital projects coordinator for their experimental humanities department, which
experimental humanities.
Yes, it's a very dangerous. It's a very Bard way of saying digital humanities. And okay. So Bard, which I loved teaching at Bard. The kids at Bard are awesome. Mm-hmm. But Bard likes to kind of do things a little differently, put a little spin on something different. So yeah. Their whole ethos for the experimental humanities program was to investigate what it means to be human. So that positioned me pretty well to think about like artificial intelligence. And, you know, a lot of that's happening in the capital region. If you look in the newspapers and write down the hall for the just a little plug for Bob Bedard's AI center there.
AI Center of Excellence.
So I was teaching at Bard and my wife was in big law in Manhattan. She was at Davis Polk. And so we were commuting opposite ways. on the train. So she mm-hmm. was commuting an hour and 20 minutes down to New York from Beacon, New York. And I was commuting an hour up to Bard. And I wasn't especially happy. And I wasn't especially happy for the reason that makes academia actually really great, which is that you have all the time in the world to like really think about stuff and be very contemplative. But with that comes doing nothing. And so I was very frustrated at Bard because I would try and do a bunch of stuff. And they were actually very receptive to that. But at the same time, when I was, you know, writing my book, for instance, I would just wake up on Saturday mornings and it just felt very long and arduous. And I called my publisher and I just said, so what's like the first run of this going to be? She said, 500 books.
Yeah. How'd that make you feel?
Terrible. Are you kidding me? 500 books? I was like, I've spent my life, you know, on the, you know, the book was on 19th and early 20th century medical photography and how it changed conceptions of patient privacy in the United States.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess backstory to the backstory, right? So before teaching at Bard, I was, I got my PhD in history of science and medicine at Yale. And yeah, and that's where I wrote that book.
Okay.
And so, and loved it.
Yeah.
But
makes perfect sense.
But
how
did
it pan out? Did you sell the 500?
No.
They're in her trunk.
No. I was like,
You're still panhandling them?
No, no. I was like, and I, you know, don't get me wrong. It gives me a bit of sadness that I'm not still in that community.
Was that your dream?
No.
To be an author?
No. No.
Just more the research and academia aspect.
I think why I got into academia is a little bit of the same reason of why I became an entrepreneur. So in academia, you can like create yourself. Like you are your own brand, right?
Yes.
Like I was my own. If anybody had a question about medical photography, they came to me, you know?
You had a book, yeah.
So, there was a line. Line in our office.
That's right.
500
and so,
deep.
And so you kind of, you make yourself, right? You're always writing grants. You're always, you know, reinventing scholarship. You're changing the way that people think about the world, which is a lot of what happens in entrepreneurship, too. So I got into academia because I was smart. So people were like, you should really do this. So really, you really have a good eye for this stuff, you know? I got into academia because I was smart and because I was successful at it because I brought entrepreneurship to academia. That said, when I was there, it was very insular. So even when I was at Yale, I worked on a project called the Just Publics at 365 project. It was probably my favorite job ever. So this project, it connected academics, activists, and the media, like media scholars, and it taught academics how to talk to the media. Very surprising, or maybe not, that that's very difficult to do.
Like, talk to the media? Properly.
No, teach academics how to talk to the media is very, very, very difficult to do. So that project was funded by the Ford Foundation.
Yeah.
Favorite job in the world. So I made this podcast series where I interviewed academics about their work and how it related to public policy. I taught these media camps. So I taught people like how to use Twitter, and like we brought in, we were connected with the CUNY Journalism School.
Okay.
So we like brought academics into these rooms and like put them on camera. And we're just like, okay, so we're going to interview you like you're on the news. It was so much fun.
It's the only way you can really learn, though.
I love the outtakes.
Being in the lights.
The outtakes. Yeah,
I'm sure the
outtakes.
The amount of outtakes we have here at Ignite U is when we have all the new teams come in during the summer, we throw them on camera.
There you go.
And we see progress throughout the year. We'll leave it at that.
And so, and that was really like, I had a blast. It was very meaningful work. And, you know, I really like that stuff. Like, I'm kind of a nerd, you know. I was working with historical societies to like figure out how to, you know, get people to come to their institutions. We made like this whole project about like tracing apples around New York City. Like, I was having a blast. Oh. Yeah.
You've been all over the place.
I have.
So how does a nerd end up running an oyster bar?
Well, I married someone really cool. So she was like,
step one.
She was like, you have to stop being such a nerd.
No, okay.
No, I kid. No, I'm kidding, but it's kind of true.
Sort of, yeah.
I was really not happy in academia. I almost didn't finish my PhD. I just wasn't happy, but it's really, really hard, especially when you're young, because I was 26 at the time, 25, 26.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard when you're young, when you're really good at something and everyone is telling you that you're good at something, to stop doing it.
Oh, yeah. A lot of.
So a lot of pressure there, mm-hmm. right? And so I almost didn't finish the PhD, yeah. but I did. Mm-hmm. And I'm very glad I did.
What got you through it?
Well, like, I can ask you to call me Dr. Knobloch, you know?
It was cocktails and books.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think what got me through it was just like sheer like force of will.
Mm-hmm.
It took me maybe 6 months to write the first chapter of my dissertation. Okay. And then after that, I was just like, I so want to be done with this. And so I took the number one impact journal in my field, which is the Bulletin of the History of Medicine. I said, what's their length of their journal articles? It's 10,000 words.
Mm-hmm.
So I just said, okay, I'm going to write an introduction, 5 chapters and an epilogue. It's this many words. And then I just broke it down and I said, this is how many words I'm going to write every day. And I just sat there.
And you did it?
Yes. And if I didn't write that many words, I wouldn't get up.
Nice.
And so then
good self-discipline.
Yes. Yeah. You have to.
Key to entrepreneurship too.
Yeah. For sure. And so, but I think that after doing all of that and after getting the only job I applied to, it's not that I didn't want a job. It's just like, I didn't want any of those jobs. So I applied to this job and it was a fantastic job.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I decided to leave, people were like mad at me.
Really?
Like, they were like, you took one of the jobs and now you're just going to leave the job,
you know?
Yeah. Anyway, but my wife was basically just like, Kelly, we'll call her Kelly.
Wife, Kelly. Yeah.
My wife's a badass and she is an attorney at Greenberg Traurig. She is a litigator and mm-hmm. she was just like, listen, you are just like so not happy and I just like, you know, I don't know what you're going to do, but you just can't be doing this anymore. You're just like really unhappy. Mm-hmm. And so my mom owns the building that Plum Oyster Bar is in.
Yep.
And it was vacant for a few months.
Really?
Yeah.
Right on 2nd Street.
Right on 2nd Street.
It's a great location.
Great location. Kelly and I had our rehearsal dinner at Lucas Confectionery.
Mm-hmm.
Right across the street.
Yeah.
Yep. I remember when Vic and Heather were building that place. And people ask me the question that I get asked most, which I feel like is kind of an odd question. I'm so happy you haven't asked it, is why oysters?
I had a better question than
that. Oh, yeah.
But you already answered it.
Oh.
My big question was why Troy?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Why Troy? Why oysters in Troy?
Yes.
Why oysters in Troy? No, now you're going to fall into the trap of asking it.
All right, why do you hate that?
We're not smart enough to ask that.
It's a very obvious question, and why do you hate it? I think it's a good question.
Yeah, I guess maybe. I think maybe I don't like it because I suspect that people want me to tell like this like really romantic story about oysters.
About your time at sea when
right,
you learned.
Yeah, yeah, like I'm a pirate or something.
Your research project was on the history of oysters.
That's right.
Do you just like them?
Yeah, I do like oysters. Right. I never worked on like an oyster farm or anything. I never, Kelly and I definitely, when we were in Brooklyn, like would go out for dollar oysters.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really all about like market research. So why I don't like the question is because it makes me seem so callous.
Yeah.
Because basically what happened was I was like, when I moved back to Troy, the thing that was most on the surface in entrepreneurship, like the thing that you could touch and feel was the restaurant community.
Mm-hmm.
And because you could touch and feel it, I was like, that's what I want to do.
Yes.
And so I think that, and I love the restaurant. And I don't think I could ever have had the same experience in another entrepreneurial endeavor as I have with the restaurant. I have the most amazing management team there.
Yeah.
And they've been there with me for almost the entire time that I have had Plum open. But when I was thinking, okay, I want a restaurant, I was like, you know what is missing in Troy is an oyster bar. I see them in Brooklyn all the time. Like there's, you know, there's oysters, right?
Yeah.
So I like did the basics. Like I did a Google keyword search. Oh, people are looking people are really like around this area, like looking for oysters, you know? Like I went over to Troyster Tuesday and I was like, there are way more people in Lucas Confectionery on Tuesdays than on Thursdays, you know? Like it was just like very, it made sense for me.
Yeah.
Sometimes people say, do you think it hurts that the name of your restaurant is Plum Oyster Bar? Because some people don't like oysters. And my answer is no, it doesn't. And I say, you know, they figured it out with Jack's Oyster House, so I think I'll be okay.
Yeah, and it has bar in it, so you're
sure
safe.
Does. Yeah.
Me and Bob will be there.
Yeah.
I love it. So when you were starting your restaurant for the first time, you say you have a great management team that's been there the whole time, which has to be a pretty hard task to both get and retain good talent like that.
Not the whole time.
Give or take. What did
six
it take?
Months.
What did it take?
6 months.
What did it take to get a good team together?
Took 6 months.
Of not a good team?
Of trial and error. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So what were some of those? What are some of the pitfalls that you fell into that other entrepreneurs may be able to avoid?
That they may be able to avoid? Oh, they can't avoid it. Sorry, if you own a restaurant, my pitfalls are your pitfalls. But
no, picking the management team.
Yeah.
Picking the management team. Sorry. Yes.
I would say having really clear expectations for what you want your management team to do, and giving them small, discrete tasks that build up their skill set. So with a restaurant, that's kind of hard because sometimes you just like need somebody to like do it all kind of thing.
Yeah.
But the biggest success I've had with any employee is my general manager. So she started off as a server and she was a server at Plum for like 3 or 4 months. And I was like, this girl is wicked smart, you know, like
you saw potential.
And she's not. Yeah. Oh yeah. I was like, and she's not super happy at this other job that she has, you know? So I wonder what she's like thinking, you know?
Yeah.
And so, and she got bumped up into a management role. And then when we were looking for kind of a more senior manager, you know, I was like, she can really do it. And so the person that runs Plum Oyster Bar is 22 years old.
Really?
Yeah. And she is a star. And it's because she's been able to, at every step of the way, take on more responsibility in a smart way. And at and when she's gotten overwhelmed by something, been able to think of a solution. And so it's seeing those qualities in people, I think, are really important. Our chef de cuisine, Eric, he's been with us for almost as long as Molly has, as long as our general manager has.
Yeah.
And they have really like formed a bedrock at Plum Oyster Bar. And the best part is we all live in that building.
Oh, really?
So we've got a little compound.
Yes.
So at Plum Oyster Bar, there's 15 and 17 are one building. Molly, the general manager, lives above Plum. And then above
And is that
her,
part of the deal?
No.
So they just pay separately? They choose
well,
to live there?
Well, it's my mom's building, yeah.
They choose to live there?
Yeah.
Okay. So they really do like you.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, you guys will have to like go and have drinks and ask them like off
we'll
the record,
ask,
you know?
Yeah.
Like,
we'll
go might have already done that there.
We'll go
once
incognito.
Or
twice.
Yeah. Get a mustache.
And then our bartender Matt lives on the third floor of 15, and then I live on the first floor of 17. My sister lives on the up above me, and then our chef lives above.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just a whole
It's a vertically integrated building.
Plum house.
That's right. It's a plum house.
Like, are there any problems with that?
No, I haven't had any problems with that. But I think that it's interesting because, you know, people tell you not to be friends with your employees. I hate that. I really do hate that. I understand why they're mm-hmm. saying that. I do. I really do, because there can be problems when you are friends with your employees. But yeah. I couldn't do it.
There's, why not?
We're a fam, you know? It's the Plum fam. You know, seriously.
You think that
I
helps you guys succeed?
I don't know, but I really like it, so yeah. I'm going to keep doing it. You know what
makes
I mean?
You happy.
Like, yeah, it makes me happy. Mm-hmm. And there's no reason to ever, ever, ever own a restaurant if it doesn't make you happy. Ever. There are plenty of reasons to be at, like, McKinsey if it doesn't make you happy, but there is no reason to own a restaurant if it doesn't make you happy. So
that's fair. A lot of legwork, right?
Yeah, literally.
I know.
Yeah.
We had Vic in here, Vic Christopher, last time, and he was talking about all the duties he takes on, and it's the dirty duty at some points.
Dirty duty.
That's the title of this
dirty
podcast
duty.
Episode.
Yeah, that's
congratulations,
right.
Heidi.
Yeah, thanks, yeah.
Oh, man. So what's next?
What's next? Well, we're Seed HQ. Like, we've officially kind of launched our sales campaign today. So
today?
Yeah.
Nice.
We're like on the hunt now.
How does that start? Are you making sales? Like,
yeah, you just call people and say, would you want to buy this product?
Because, and are people buying it yet?
Well, today's the first stage.
So you just launched.
Like, okay. Yeah, it's 3:30. Yeah.
Do we have a need for it at Ignite You?
I guess I could.
We could be your first customer.
Yeah, yeah. No, you don't.
So we have no receipts.
Yeah. No receipts.
No receipts.
All right. Well, we'll ask around for you.
Yeah. Well,
so, how's that going?
It's going well. So I want to have 2,500 locations in the first year. So you can bring me back in a year from now. So when you say that number, it sounds really scary, but mm-hmm. if you think about the way that hospitality companies are managed, it's actually not that many people. So
if I was, let's say, a clam bar in Troy,
yes.
and I want to use your service, what's that like? How much am I going to be paying about each month? Is it like a subscription thing? How does it work?
Yeah, so you would sign up for probably a multi-year contract.
Okay.
In the same way that you sign up for a linen contract.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on how many receipts you have, what frequency you want the receipts to be scanned,
yeah.
How many envelopes you're sending back in.
But, and I mail them all to you?
That's correct. To the Troy Innovation Garage.
Troy Innovation Garage. Love it.
So let's back up one, though, because you hired a great management team over time. How did you mm-hmm. decide on the sales team?
Well, so I have one person right now working in sales. He's consulting with me on sales.
Mm-hmm.
But to be very honest with you, I think that like a lot of it in entrepreneur world, it's just going to be me for a little while. You know, that's kind of how you have to do it. It's like a hit the pavement time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, although I have been known to sell things and be good at selling things, I don't particularly like love that aspect,
yeah.
but you have to do it yourself for some time because you have to see like what people are asking, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if people are saying, you know, they ask you weird questions, right? People ask me weird questions at Plum Whisperer all the time. I never thought that they would ask me,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, I don't know, like, can you fry up these oysters or something like that? You know what I mean? Like, just like stuff like that, right? And so, yeah, you can. But the oysters that we make that we fry are like just a different, it's like a different.
Different
like
ball game, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I'm not going to shuck this oyster and fry it for you. You know, it's weird. But so anyway, so you have to do some of that.
So you work out all
yourself.
The kinks by yourself.
Right.
And then you pass it on to other people. Once there's a playbook written.
Once there's a process. So if you talk to, you know what you should do for these podcasts is bring in a couple like managers too. Because,
yeah,
for sure. Because if you talk to Molly, she's great. Because if we have a new employee come on,
mm-hmm.
the first thing she says is, listen. Heidi's all about systems. She's all about systems
mm-hmm.
and correct grammar in emails. So if you can't do that, come to me first and we'll figure it out. You know? So it's figuring out efficiencies is something that I've always, I just love that. Today, the reason I'm coming here in a sweatshirt is we're redoing behind the oyster bar to put refrigeration behind there.
Dirty duty.
That's right.
You are what do you have against bad grammar in emails?
I guess it's not bad grammar. I guess just like wasting my time.
Do you assume if they have bad grammar, they're a waste of time?
It's not, again, not bad grammar, but if it's like, if you wrote me an email that said, I want to put a pork chop on the menu. it's a waste of my time. You haven't told me how much it's going to cost me. Mm-hmm. You haven't told me
too
anything.
Big.
It's a waste of my time. Tell them me in passing if you want to, you know, get a feeler out there. But if you're proposing something, like, propose it.
Yeah.
Heidi hates lazy. That's right. Heidi hates lazy.
That could be the title of this one.
I'm working on it. Trying to get that other one away.
No more dirty duty, I guess. You put a couple people on blast online. I love it.
Oh, yeah?
When someone sends you like a terrible email, either asking like for a job. I mean, you hide their identity, but you crack me up.
Oh, I don't even remember doing that. Man.
It was after drinking.
Yeah, it was after your best cocktails. What'd you say, best cocktails in the capital region?
Absolutely.
So have you won an award, or is that just self-proclaimed?
Trial and error.
I'm not denying it. I had one of the most magnificent cocktails. You guys were one of the few places that stayed open during a big snowstorm. So my friends and I went on a little bar trek through like 2 feet of snow, and you guys served me a cocktail with, it was like in a box, and it was all smoky, and you like opened it. It was like a little treasure chest. No oysters in it, though.
No,
so I just have one question for future guests.
Yes.
You have a book, The Best Cocktails and Oysters, and we have no samples in front of us.
Oh, yeah.
You're right. What am I doing?
I don't know.
And for pure transparency, the fried oyster thing was from Richard. He asked for it while we were there.
Our producer, Richard. He loves fried oysters. Can't hate him for that. Oh, man. Well, we're excited for you. We'll be patronizing you and looking forward for everything to come. What?
I don't think that's the right word.
Patronizing?
Is that the right word?
Patronizing can mean going to your business or like making fun of you.
Right.
So you'll find out which one it is in the future.
We'll do both.
Perfect.
We promise.
Please do. Thank you.
Oh.
Please reciprocate.
Thank you guys for listening to Upstate on the Move. For more podcasts and information about what's going on here at Ignite U, visit us at www.igniteuny.com or follow us at Ignite U NY. Talk to you later.